A group of lovers of the cantatas by Johann Sebastian Bach has gathered over the years to listen closely to these works in their mastery and various performances and interpretations. Most of their comments are scholarly in tone and detail, but they usually let their personal excitement shine through, like this when Aria Oron writes about Cantata No. 21. Cantata 21 has never been close to my heart as number 4 or number 82 are. I cannot explain why. I believe that something like that happens to most people. I mean that you feel closer to some musical works than to others, and the level of the music and the excellence of the performance cannot supply a full explanation for this phenomenon. In the TV series Ally McBeal, they mention quite often the song. They say, "This is my song," or "the song that does it to me." I remember something similar was also mentioned in one of the chapters of the legendary TV series Seinfeld. So I thought that BWV 21 was not my song until this week came. I dedicated a lot of time listening to it in various recordings, and I fell in love with this cantata. From now on, it will also be my song. On the other hand, when the distinguished conductor John Elliott Gardner tells us of his enthusiasm for number 21, he speaks more specifically about musically why. In his liner notes to the Bach Cantata Pilgrimage 2000 Complete Recordings, he writes, "I first conducted BWV 21 in 1979. It struck me then as one of the most extraordinary and inspired of Bach's vocal works, and remains so now when I have become much more familiar with all the other cantatas. It opens with a sinfonia in C minor of miraculous poignancy, the oboe and first violins exchanging arabesques and coming to rest on no less than 3 pauses replete with gestural pathos. The end result is that even before the voices enter, the idea of pecumenis, affliction, is firmly established in the listener's mind." This is a mood that persists through all 6 movements of Part 1, 5 of them set almost obsessively in C minor. And John Elliott Gardner calls our attention to the repeated ichs, which precede the fugal presentation of the opening chorus. All this we learn from BachCantatas.com. Cantata 21 is a grand cantata, and it takes us on quite a journey. And yet we meet many listeners like Aria Oron, for whom it has become their song. And that's perhaps because of the intimacy of that journey, opening, as we have just heard, with I, 3 separate times. Ich, 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 I. That's the excitement of engaging with a master like Bach, plunging into the heart of the oh-so-deeply personal human experience, and even in the same work, climbing to the heights of heaven. And it is those kinds of encounters and moving experiences the Arcadia Chorale has been inviting us to for over 3 decades. This weekend's annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival will feature Cantata No. 21, and that's only one of so many works. Dr. Stephen Thomas is music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, and he paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about all the celebrating this Saturday and Sunday in Scranton.
This is the 34th annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival. I've not been around for all of those, but that number is climbing. And as they have mostly been over the many years we've been doing this festival, it's three concerts over 2 days, typically near to Bach's birthday. That's sort of how the thing got started, and we try to honor that. And his birthday, of course, is March 21st. This year, it's March 23rd and 24th, and we've got two concerts on Saturday. At 4 o'clock, we have an organ concert, like we typically do. We have a guest organist, Brenda Lynn Leach, who's director of orchestral activities at Marywood University, as well as, of course, being a fabulous organist. So that's at 4 o'clock on the Saturday. And then that evening, a nice little break for dinner, if people want to you know, structure their day that way. At 7:30, we have a chamber music concert. And that features, like it always does, members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra. And they're doing this year music by Bach, of course, but also Elgar and Reger. So that's Saturday. And then on Sunday, we have the big finish, the choral music concert. That's at Sunday, March 24th. That's at 3 o'clock. And that is a performance at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton of Bach's Cantata 21, which is Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, and Haydn's Paukenmesse, or also known as the Mass in Time of War. So it's quite a weekend. Lots going on and lots of wonderful music that people can come hear.
We always know that the organists are of the highest caliber, and they always have intriguing programs. Whether it's all Bach or Bach in conversation. What is Brenda Lynn?
Well, so the conversation aspect is the angle that she has taken. And, you know, every year we bring in someone. I mean, this is the first time that we've had Brenda Lynn Leach on the festival. So I'm very excited to be able to feature her. People may know her from her work conducting the orchestra at Marywood, but she's actually a wonderful organist. She's played all over the world. She's played at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, Westminster Cathedral in London. She's played at the Moscow Cathedral in Russia, and there's a long list. But she's also played domestically at the Washington National Cathedral, St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York, and now, of course, at Elm Park United Methodist Church in Scranton. We're very pleased to be able to feature her there. She studied in Paris as well as in the U.S. She has a master's and a doctorate from the Eastman School of Music. So she's a wonderful, wonderful musician, and she's put together a really terrific program. And as you mentioned, you know, some years it's just Bach. Sometimes it branches out from there, And she's put together a program that everyone has a connection to Bach somehow. So one of the things that she's done, Bach is particularly known for his use of Lutheran hymns or chorales. And he uses these melodies in his works in various ways. And Dr. Leach has structured her program around three of these chorale melodies. And in each case, she has a Bach version and somebody else. So it's a pair of some organ piece using this melody by Bach, and then an organ piece using the same melody by someone else. So, for example, one tune that many people may be familiar with is Wachet auf, ruft uns die Stimme, known as Sleepers Awake. And the Bach version is from the set of chorales, chorale preludes, known as the Schubler chorales. And it's actually an arrangement by Bach of a movement from one of his best-known cantatas, Cantata 140. Now, of course, it's nice for me, as the, you know, directing the choir, the Arcadia Chorale, it's nice when there's a choral connection on these concerts, and so that is one. So there's that, and then that work is paired with a chorale prelude by another German composer who's almost an exact contemporary of Bach's, and also happened to be his cousin, Johann Gottfried Walther. And so then the other pairs, there's Schmücke dich, o liebe Seele, Adorn Yourself, O Dear Soul, a version by Bach, and by Brahms. And then Nun danket alle Gott, Now Thank We All Our God, a version from one of Bach's cantatas, Cantata 79, although this one was arranged by E. Power Biggs, not by Bach. So it's sort of, you know, Bach through a translator in a way. And then Egil Hovland, who is a composer that I know because of his choral music, but he's not that well-known a composer. He was a 20th century Norwegian composer. And so he did a version using, again, the same chorale melody that Bach used. So I think that's a really interesting way to structure the concert. And there's more than just that, but to have these sort of pillars in the concert, you know, these pairs of pieces sort of spaced throughout the program. So that's I think, a wonderful way to bring in some of those other composers that do have connections to Bach. So now the chamber music concert. As we do every year, we feature members of the Bach Festival Orchestra. This year, there are two works by J.S. Bach, and two works by more recent composers, Max Reger and Edward Elgar. So I think I'll start with the works by Bach. The first of the two is his Flute Sonata in E minor, BWV 1034. This is one of six sonatas that Bach wrote for the flute, an instrument that he enjoyed writing for, and I think flute players, these are sort of staples of the repertoire. And it features Ed Wargo, with Gail Klaber on cello and Sukasa Waltich on harpsichord. Members of this orchestra from, I don't know, it seems like time immemorial, but certainly since I've been around. And then the other piece by Bach is a trio sonata in C major, BWV 529. And this is a piece that was originally written for organ and was arranged for instruments by Tom Heintz, who's our artistic director for the chamber concert. And Tom has arranged many, if not all, of these organ trio sonatas for instruments. And we've done a number of them over the years. And they're infamously difficult to play on the organ. I have a number of friends who are organists, and these are challenging pieces to take on because each of the three lines, so trio sonata, three lines, each one of them is very independent. And so it requires a lot of coordination to be able to perform these on the organ. But of course, that makes them work very well for three separate instruments. And this is what Tom has done. He's taken each of these lines and given them two, three instruments. And in this arrangement, the three instruments are oboe, viola, and cello. So Tom Heintz is an oboist. He will be playing the oboe part. Harold Levine is a member of our orchestra. He will be playing viola. And Gail Klaber makes another appearance on cello, playing the cello part. So these are wonderful pieces, and they're really interesting to hear in this version. So by having the different timbres of the three instruments, you can really hear the independence of these lines and how the music works. And anyway, it's great stuff. And I think exciting to hear this organ piece in a new way. So then the other two pieces on the chamber concert, one is Elgar's string quartet in E minor, Opus 83. This is one of his last major works. He wrote a number of chamber works, actually, right at the sort of end of his composing career, although he lived for a number of years after that. But he still kept composing, but not a whole lot and not major works. So this is sort of the last big creative period. This piece was written in 1918, and it's his only string quartet. So it's interesting to hear. I think people maybe know his orchestral music. I mean, he did write choral music as well, so maybe some people know that. But this is a chance to hear this string quartet. And it's performed by Sophie Till, who's our concertmaster of the orchestra, and John Vida, both on violin, and then Amy Iwazumi on viola, and Christiana Oppenheimer-Vida on cello. So it's a wonderful quartet. They've been doing, actually, they sort of have a standing group, and they get together. They love playing as a quartet. And then the last piece on the program is Max Reger's Serenade for Flute, Violin, and Viola. So of the composers on this program, Reger probably is the least known. But Max Reger is, I think, maybe somewhat less known, and his works haven't entered the standard repertoire maybe as much as some of the, you know, as certainly as the other composers on this program. And he was a German composer, lived in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. He wrote a lot of music in many genres, especially organ and vocal and choral music, but also, of course, chamber works. And he has sort of a reputation of writing abstract academic works, kind of. But this serenade really isn't like that. It's light and melodic and almost playful kind of piece. So I think it will be a delightful addition to the program. And it's a little different than some of the others in that there's no bass voice. So you've got the flute and the violin and the viola are all relatively high. I mean, viola a little less, of course, a little lower, but you know, you don't have the cello, you don't have a bass, you don't have the low end of the spectrum there. So it's, I think, an interesting collection of timbres there, all in the sort of the higher end. So this features Ed Wargo again on flute and Jeffrey Ellenberger on violin and Martha McAdams on the viola. So it's such a treat to be able to have these. I mean, I get to work with them because they play in the orchestra for the choral concert, and it's wonderful to be able to then hear them do other things and feature them on this chamber music concert. So it's a great part of the festival as a whole, and I'm really looking forward to actually just getting to hear these wonderful musicians play.
That's at Covenant.
That is at Covenant Presbyterian Church, right? That's on the Saturday evening at 7:30. And then, of course, the last day, the second day of the festival, is devoted to the choral music concert. That's Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And this time around, this year, we're doing two works. First half is Bach, second half is Haydn. The first half is Bach's Cantata 21, Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, I had much trouble. And this is actually Bach's largest cantata. That's not why we're doing it, but, you know, one of them has to be the largest, and this is it. It's 11 movements long, and it takes the listener on a journey from the depths of dark despair into comfort, hope, and brilliant light. It's sort of this wonderful study in contrasts in some ways. And it begins with an opening sinfonia for oboe and strings. And this is something that Bach does sometimes. He starts with just a purely instrumental music, even though there's text, of course, that is the sort of genesis of the piece, but he will often start, or sometimes start, with just a purely instrumental thing. And this is, it's really a lovely, lovely way to begin it, and just a nice feature, especially for the oboe. And after that, then, is the first choral movement, which features, among other things, a theme from a concerto by Vivaldi. Now, this piece is interesting in structure in that it has lots of different sections, so tempo changes and you know, different themes come in and so on, and it's very connected to the text. This is actually something that his predecessors, like the antecedents in German sacred music, do a lot of this kind of thing. Bach tends to do it maybe somewhat less a little bit later in his career, but this is a relatively early piece with this part of it. So it's an interesting, there's just these sudden shifts. You get to a new word, and you know, the one little section is just two notes on the word aber, and you know, things like that. But anyway, this theme from a concerto by Vivaldi is interesting in that it hints at the origin of the work. So he wrote this cantata when he was the music director at the court in Weimar. What a lot of his cantatas were written for was Leipzig, which is sort of the last place that he was, and he was there for a fairly long time. But this is an earlier appointment that he had. And while he was there, he had a student who was a young prince in the court. And this prince fell very ill and left the court to go to a spa to try to recover, to gain his health. That was ultimately unsuccessful, and he didn't live. But this cantata was written sort of to mark the departure of the prince from court. That was one of the motivations for it. And apparently this Vivaldi concerto that Bach was quoting was one of the favorite pieces of this prince. So, you know, it was a way, as a sort of a tribute, a farewell kind of thing, and something that the prince would certainly have recognized and understood that was a, you know, sort of written with him in mind, you know, and so on. The cantata also features a number of arias, including a soprano-based duet, which is this dialogue, very interesting dialogue between the soul in distress, that's the soprano is representing, the soul in distress, and Jesus is the bass voice, who is offering comfort to the soul. And it's this duet that's kind of a love duet in a way. You know, it has sort of that aspect to it in some ways. And there's an interesting historical note here, because this cantata 21, is one that was in Baron von Swieten's library, and he's a historical figure that Mozart knew. And we know that Mozart had access to his library. And so it seems that this duet in this cantata that Bach wrote was at least a partial inspiration for some of the love duets in Mozart's operas. So that's sort of an interesting connection that you might not necessarily get from just listening to the cantata, but it's, I think, one of the things that we look at, especially in the organ concert in this program, but in the other ones as well, is that connection between Bach and the composers either after him or sometimes before, but his influence on other people. And then the cantata ends with a text that will be familiar to anyone who knows Handel's Messiah. Das Lamm, das erwürget ist, ist würdig zu nehmen Kraft und Reichtum und Weisheit und Stärke und Ehre und Preis und Lob. So, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. That, of course, is the text from the final movement of Handel's Messiah. And it's the text of the final movement here in Bach's cantata. And, you know, we've been through this journey of the there's a lot of kind of despair and things are never going to be okay. But then Jesus says, well, actually, things will be okay. And we sort of get that dialogue that goes on. But then here at the end, we get this very joyful conclusion of the cantata. And we have trumpets and timpani that have been sitting silent the whole cantata. They're just doing nothing. And then suddenly at this last movement, they burst forth triumphantly. And the chorus ends with this brilliant and just incredibly joyful fugue. It's one of the most fun things to sing, I think, that Bach ever wrote. And hopefully that sort of joy that the singers have in singing it will come through to the audience as well. So this cantata features a number of soloists from the chorale: Martina Barna, Kathy Brink, Lauren Kucha, Christopher Gallo, Susan Moon Savage, Aileen Olsommer, and Wes Poole all get their moments in the sun in this cantata. So that's the first half of the program. It's large enough to be a half a program. Like I mentioned, it's as large as cantata. So after an intermission, we'll come back and we'll do the second half, which is Haydn's Missa in Tempore Belli, or Mass in Time of War, also known as the Pauken Messa. And this Mass is one of six late Masses. So he wrote, over the course of, I think, 7 years, he wrote these six Masses for the name day celebration of the wife of his employer. And I think this was just about his only official responsibility. At the end of his life, he was employed at Esterhazy. And this was his, you can do whatever you want, just write this one Mass a year. So the Mass definitely has a celebratory feel to it, but it's not just that. So there are also anxious elements in the piece. So he wrote it in 1796, and at this time Napoleon was waging war in Italy and threatening Austria. And some of that threat appears in this piece. And that duality, the sort of celebration on the one hand, anxiety on the other hand, it's represented in part by the tension between C major, which is the primary key of the work, and sections of the work that are in C minor. I think actually in some ways this duality makes it a nice pairing with the Bach, because we have some of those elements in the Bach, the darkness and light and those sorts of, positive negative ideas that are worked out over the course of the cantata. Here again, the same idea that we have these differing elements in it. And some other things that I think are interesting about this Mass, I mean, Haydn had just returned from England, his second journey, last journey to England. And while he was there, he composed his London symphonies, right? So some of them, I think, were composed there. Some were composed before he went over. He'd been writing a lot of symphonies, and these are major works, some of his best symphonic writing. And you can hear some of that in this Mass, that there's some symphonic influence. And right at the start, actually, the Kyrie, the first movement of the Mass, it begins with a slow introduction, which, of course, is very often the part of Haydn symphonies. They start with this slow introduction before you get into the main, allegro part of the movement. And that's just what happens here in the Kyrie. It starts with a slow intro, and then the soprano soloist comes in and introduces this new theme, and it's fast and it's exciting. And the Gloria has a three-part structure, fast, slow, fast, which again has symphonic sort of echoes to it. And that slow, by the way, is this beautiful duet. It starts off with this wonderful solo cello part, and then the bass soloist comes in echoing the themes that the solo cello introduced, and then eventually the chorus comes in. And so in those, some of those places and other places in the Mass, it seems like Haydn is concerned with structure in some ways more than the specific meanings of the words, although that certainly is at play. So for instance, in the Kyrie, people that are familiar with the text, it's three-part text. Kyrie eleison, Christe eleison, Kyrie eleison. Three parts. Traditionally, in Masses very often there's three separate sections or whatever. For Haydn, the Christe lasts about four measures. So he's not particularly interested in balancing those that way. There are other considerations that he's working with. It's all there, but he's not quite doing the same approach that say some other composers take to that same text. So moving on to the Credo. The Credo begins in this very joyful place in C major, but then it moves to C minor. Again, we get this contrast and tension between the major and the minor. He moves to C minor for Et Incarnatus Est, and there's a sense of foreboding there, which you can sort of perceive in two ways. One is the suffering of Jesus that is about to happen or be talked about, and then, of course, for the threat of war. And I think both work. And it's interesting that you've got that. In some ways, the suffering is different suffering, but it's still suffering. And I think that you can really understand it that way, both ways. But then there's a return to C major at Et Resurrexit, and was resurrected. And the Credo finishes with a very joyful fugue. So then after, there's a lot of excitement there, a lot of fast music. So the start of the Sanctus, which follows, is a welcome break from that excitement. It starts with this beautiful melody in the violin. It's much more expansive and slow than what's preceded it. And then we get the Benedictus, which follows the Sanctus, and the Benedictus features our solo quartet for the Haydn. I mentioned in Bach we featured a number of soloists. For the Haydn, we're actually bringing in two guest soloists, the soprano and the alto, Jennifer Colgill and Ellen Rakowski. Jennifer Colgill is the soprano, Ellen Rakowski is the alto. Ellen has sung for us many times before, but this is the first time that I've had a chance to work with Jennifer Colgill. So I'm very excited to get to work with her. And then our tenor is Wes Poole, as it was for the Bach, and Christopher Gallo also for the Bach. The two of them are both, doing multiple solos here for both the Bach and for the Haydn. So that the Benedictus features that quartet. They sing throughout the Mass, but a lot of it is for contrast. And sometimes it's just, two or three measures here, two or three measures there. But this is an extended section where they get to actually function as a quartet, and it's a wonderful texture change again from everything else. And they're wonderful. They're going to sound fabulous. And then we get to the final movement, the Agnus Dei, which begins in C minor. So we're back to the, the sort of the darkness of that. And the Agnus Dei begins with a plea for mercy, and it sounds kind of desperate in a way, this sort of desperate plea for mercy. And the timpani, so all along through the piece, in various spots where it makes sense, the excitement is there and so on, the trumpets and the timpani have been playing throughout the Mass to this point. But the timpani here in the Agnus Dei has a particularly prominent role, and I think it's from here, this movement, that we get the nickname of the Mass. So the Mass in Time of War, right, is the original official name, but the Pauken Messe, or timpani Mass. So Pauken is timpani, so timpani Mass. That's one of the names that the Mass has sort of acquired over the years, and I think that this movement is largely why, because it kind of reinforces the sense of foreboding, this, you know, ominous feel. And it's very cool, actually. So I'm excited to put all of that together, you know, be able to make that work, that feeling work for this movement. But when the text reaches the point where there's the plea for peace, you know, Agnus Dei, the text asks first for mercy and then on the third iteration for peace. At that point, the ominous mood breaks and we have a celebration, and the celebration of the anticipated peace. So we're asking for peace, but clearly we are anticipating, expecting that will happen. And it's just wonderfully celebratory, again, celebrating the name day, right, of the wife of his patron, but also celebrating this peace, this hoped for and expected peace. So I think I mentioned that there's interesting parallels, but that's, again, this is partly how I program, trying to make something work for the whole piece. So we have, they're actually both in C major, although Haydn actually spends more time in C major than Bach does. Bach is a little bit more adventurous harmonically, I think, in these, at least in these pieces. And they both go to some dark places, but end very joyfully. So hopefully that joy is something that people will come looking for, maybe needing, and that's something that we can provide with this concert.
Dr. Stephen Thomas, music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale, speaking with us about the 34th annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival, taking place this weekend in Scranton. The festival opens on Saturday, March 23rd at 4 in the afternoon with an organ concert at Elm Park United Methodist Church. The concert will be featuring organist Brenda Lynn Leach, and she will have a great range of pieces, as we heard from Dr. Thomas, and that includes music of Bach, but much more as well. Then in the evening on Saturday at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton, members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra will present a program of chamber music by Bach, Elgar, Reger. They'll include this sonata in E minor for flute and continuo by Bach. Also on the program, Edward Elgar's string quartet in E minor, and a trio sonata of Bach for organ that has been arranged by Tom Hines for oboe, viola, and cello. The Bach Festival concludes with a choral concert on Sunday, March 24th at 3 in Covenant Presbyterian Church in Scranton, opening with Bach's Cantata No. 21. And also the Mass in Time of War by Joseph Haydn, also known as the Pauken Messe because of the timpani and its prominent part in the Agnus Dei. That's all part of the 34th annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival, and it's presented by the Arcadia Chorale under the direction of Dr. Stephen Thomas. And there will be three concerts Saturday afternoon at 4 at Elm Park United Methodist Church, featuring organist Brenda Lynn Leach. Then on Saturday evening, the 23rd, at 7:30 p.m. at Covenant Presbyterian Church, members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra presenting a chamber music program, Bach, Elgar, and Reger. And then the conclusion of the weekend, Sunday, March 24th at 3 in Covenant Presbyterian Church, Bach's Cantata No. 21 and Haydn's Mass in Time of War. There will be no admission charge for the organ concert. That is free. and the chamber music and choral concerts have ticketed admission, but they are good enough to work with us at WVIA, and they offer WVIA members a discount on the admission. And for more information about the entire festival, ArcadiaChorale.org, ArcadiaChorale.org, the 34th Annual Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival, featuring the Arcadia Chorale, Saturday and Sunday, opening with an organ concert at Elm Park United Methodist Church at 4, moving to Covenant Presbyterian Church on Saturday evening for the chamber concert, and then remaining at Covenant Presbyterian Church for Sunday's culminating choral concert at 3. For more information, on the web, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org.